Om Avyayantu Mamangalani Vakranas Chakshushrotramato Balavanindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Astu Anirakaranam Me Astu Taratmani Nirate Ya Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mai Santu Te Mai Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's just chant together in part two. Just, I know you're learning it, so just try to do your best to just go through.
Om Yadi Manyase Suvedeti Daharame Vapinunam Twamam Veta Brahmanorupam Yadasya Twam Yadasya Deveshvata.
It's me, it's not you.
Yarasya
Deveshu
Yarasya Deveshu
Atanu Mimamsyam Evate
Atanu Mimamsyam Evate
Manye Viditam
Manye Viditam.
Together.
Naham Manye Suvedeti Nona Vedeti Vedacha Yonastadveda tadveda Nona vedeti vedacha Yasyamatam tasyamatam Matam yasyanavedasaha Avignatam vijanatam Vignatam avijanatam.
That's the verse we're going to do. Yasya. We did it yesterday, but I'm going to repeat after me. Yasya amatam. Yasya amatam.
Yasya amatam.
Tasya matam.
Tasya matam.
Matam yasya.
Matam yasya.
Naveda saha.
Naveda saha.
Avignatam.
Avignatam.
Vijanatam.
Vijanatam.
Vignatam.
Vignatam.
Avijanatam.
Avijanatam.
So this is the Rishi summarizing what's been said so far. So just to put in what he doesn't actually say, but which is implied Yesya amitam tasya mitam. For whom Brahman is amitam, for whom Brahman is not known as an object. That has to be understood. So for whom Brahman is not known, well, if Brahman is not known, then there's no moksha. Brahman has to be known, but in what form is it actually known? It is not known as an object. So it's like saying, for whom Brahman is known but cannot be objectified. Right? So, yesya amitam, tasya amitam, for the one for whom Brahman is not known as an object, for that person, matam, Brahman is known. For whom matam Brahma matam, for whom Brahman is known, na veda saha, that one, that person, na veda, he does not know. The one for whom Brahman is known, which means is known as an object, that person doesn't know. Avignatam vijanatam, for those vijanatam, for those who know, avignatam, let me say avignatam, Brahman is not known. Put in Brahman here. Brahman for those we'd say like this. Brahman is not known. Avignanatam. Brahman is not known as an object. Vignanatam, for those who know. For those who know Brahman, Brahman is not known as an object. Then, vignatam, for those vignatam Brahman is known as an object. Vignatam is known. Brahman is known as an object of vijanatam, for those who don't know. That janatam should be gnanatam. Another typo. All of these, even Brahman is aviditat, you know, the one who is other than what is unknown cannot be known, and one who is different than, other than, beyond what can be known. This is the nature of Brahman, which means that there's no way whatsoever of objectifying Brahman. Even anything that is unknown potentially can become known. And not only that, you're aware of what you know and what you don't know. Right? I know what I know. I know what I don't know. You don't know all that you know. You don't know. What you don't know is next to infinite. Right? But if somebody asks you, do you know that? Do you know that? You say, no, I don't. I've never even heard of it. I don't know that. You know what you know. You know what you don't know. So even your ajnanam can be objectified, right? Because you can check out your memory banks and you say, oh, is this thing known to me or not? No, it is not known. Even the full complement of ajnanam in deep sleep, where there's nothing really but ajnanam, I don't know anything, even that is known when you wake up to be able to make a comment on it, because that ajnanavritti is there, that ajnanavritti is illumined, even though from the standpoint of the ajnanavritti, there's no subject-object relationship. But when I wake up, I have a vritti, they're called chitta, it's the memory. I have a memory of that state of absolute ignorance. And I can even describe it, I don't know anything at that time. There's no subject-object differentiation. The world is not present to be perceived. Myself as a knower is not up. There is just, I don't know anything. And I can also say, in terms of the quality of that condition, it was really nice to have such a deep sleep. That deep sleep has some of the Ananda Swarupa, you know, is illuminating that deep sleep, and that deep sleep is really not acting as much of a pratibandhika or an obstruction for that. That's one of the reasons we call, or Swamiji's joke, that deep sleep is a lazy man's samadhi, you know. Don't worry about it, just go to sleep and everything will be fine by that time. You've got a nice span of time. You can just be with yourself. It's a beautiful thing. So, the Ajnanam itself is known. And things that we're ignorant of also can become known. But Brahman is something which is beyond or other than everything that can be known and also everything that is unknown. And so, how to know Brahman? How can we know Brahman? This is the problem. Part of the problem is this, is that in our experience, every single thing without exception that we know in the world requires a pramana. And so everything is dependent, in a sense, on what we call this tripati around knowledge. Tripati means that which has three ingredients in it. The pramatra, the knower, the pramana, the means of knowledge, and the prameya, the object of knowledge. So everything I know requires to come into relationship, I would say, with consciousness. Say if there's no consciousness, and say, using my sense organs, I form a vritti in my mind, but there's no consciousness illumining that vritti. Then that object cannot be known. And in fact, if the object cannot be known, it also, say it cannot be known, the object cannot be known, in terms of a subject-object relationship, the object can also not exist. That's an interesting concept. If the object cannot be known, means it's non-objectifiable. You may not know it, or you may not know it, but it has to be there in Ishvara. That Namarupa has to be there, which can be objectified. Now, when we say that any object must be able to be objectified, what do we really mean is that if I have a pramana, a means of knowledge that is capable of knowing that object, of knowing that object, it will form a vritti in my mind, and that vritti enjoys being, sat, and it enjoys chit, consciousness. Every vritti enjoys sat, chit. But every vritti does not have as its swarupa, as its nature, sat-chit. Its nature is not conscious being. Its nature is not, it doesn't have existence in its own right. First of all, it doesn't have existence in its own right. It's because the vritti comes into existence and goes out of existence. So the vritti actually borrows the existence from the conscious being that is illumining it. When the vritti is present, it is and it is known. But when the vritti goes away, then it no longer is and it no longer is known. Say, for example, the vritti, you took a walk and you saw a beautiful tree and you're describing the beautiful tree to your friends. There's two things that are happening there. First of all, when your pramana, when your means of knowledge, say your eyes landed on that tree, then you had a vritti, which had for its prameya, for its object, tree, and that vritti being sattva, a vritti in the mind, is then illumined by consciousness. But now when you turn your pramana, your means of knowledge, your mind, away from that tree, now that tree is no longer existing and being known in terms of your immediate experience. So where is it now? Now, because you had that vritti is now stored in the citta, in the memory. But for me to have that vritti again, I either have to go back to the tree and look at it as I did before, and then there it is. There the tree is and it is known. Or I have to recall the memory of the tree, and then the memory is and is known. So this is what we do. You know, we have all kinds of experiences. We have gained all kinds of knowledge. They're all stored in the citta. When we need them, we bring the vritti back. And now that vritti is remembered as a memory. The memory enjoys what? Sat-chit. Any vritti, whether it be... So you have to think of vritti not only as something, a vritti, a thought modification born of a of one of your means of knowledge. The antakarana, the mind is capable of all kinds of vrittis. It can have an imaginal vritti. But if it has an imaginal vritti, whatever that is, it is there here and now, right, then it enjoys consciousness, it is known, and also it is. But say the imaginal vritti is, you have no need for it at this moment, so then you just don't think about it anymore. It goes back into the citta, into the memory, and then you can bring it up again as you're describing the interesting active imagination or whatever, you know, inner child work or whatever you did. You're describing that to your friend, and so now this vritti comes back. So you have a vritti. The vritti is and is known. It doesn't matter. The content of the vritti doesn't matter. It's just that for that content to be known, to exist and to be known, it needs to be there. It needs to be there. If it's not, it can be there in the form of memory or in the form of something that is immediately being born of your pramanas. Now, even if you have an imagination or an emotion or some type of imaginal thing or an emotion or some sort of journeying or meditative experience, emotional experience, meditative experience, that also is a pramana. Just the mind itself taking on a vritti becomes the means for that imagination to be known, that emotion to be known. Instead of being called pratyaksha, indriya pratyaksha means that a direct immediate knowledge that is born through your sense perception, right? This is called pratyaksha, but it's called sakshibhasya pratyaksha. That means that because the mind has certain capacities, certain types of vrittis, buddhi vrittis, the manas emotional vrittis, the citta, you know, the citta bringing forth memories, or the ahankara, the I notion. So it has different types of vrittis, but any vritti by its nature, right, reflects consciousness. If the consciousness is there. If there's some sort of vritti hanging out in the unconscious, you know, then it's removed from consciousness, and that vritti is not known for the moment. You have to bring it back into your mind. If you want to have an imagination, that vritti, that imaginal vritti has to take place, and then it is known. When it goes away, it is no longer experienced. So, in fact, what we are used to here is using our pramana, even the mind, you know, which acts as a pramana, sakshibhasya means the vritti is illumined directly by the witness. Everything that we know in the world is known because of our vrittis. And they're known because of our vrittis, because the vrittis are sattva and the vrittis are illumined, not as a verb, but are illumined by conscious being, by consciousness, which is existence itself. And so I can say, well, what is that consciousness, which is existence? What is my experience of that day to day? What is my experience of this consciousness existence, this existent consciousness? What in the Upanishad they're calling the ear of the ear and the mind of the mind and the eye of the eye and the speech of the speech and the prana of the prana. What is that? What are they referring to in terms, in my own language? What language do I use to refer to this conscious being, consciousness? This is a sound. What is the language that I use in my vocabulary to point to consciousness? Remember, there's only one word, really. One word with synonyms. Because I can't say, in terms of any type of objectification, oh, look at the consciousness. Look at that consciousness over there. Look at that consciousness over there. Look at that consciousness. Look at that conscious being. Look at that being, which is consciousness, moving about. There is no possibility of objectifying consciousness, nor do we have a name for it, right? We don't have a name for consciousness. Look at the consciousness. And yet, every single vritti that we have, without exception, equally enjoys conscious being. In terms of its isness, you know, its isness, and in terms of its knownness, in terms of its knownness. So, If I say, this vritti is and it is known, this vritti is, it is known, that is known really is just a synonym for consciousness. What is the word that refers to, in my language, refers to conscious being? And I'll even say, go a little step further, the experience of conscious being. The experience of conscious being which cannot be objectified. I can't look at conscious being running around. But still, I know conscious being. I even say, I am a conscious being. And when what does it mean when I say, I am a conscious being? I hope it doesn't mean, I don't assume that it means if I say, I am a conscious being, that I'm looking at myself over here as a conscious being. No. Would you say a vritti is a conscious being? Let's put it this way. Do you say that a vritti or a thought modification that you might have, it could be anything, any experience, is that vritti a conscious being? I would say the vritti itself, right, seems to enjoy or reflect consciousness, because any vritti that you have is and is known. So we could say the vritti is the conscious being. But the problem with that is that every vritti that you have comes and goes, and conscious being doesn't go with it. So say the vritti itself is the conscious being. Okay, this conscious being has just arrived. Conscious being has just arrived, and oh, it's going. And so now the conscious being is moving along. Yeah. And so it's its own thing. It's its own being. It is the vritti is a conscious being. It came, said hello to me. I said hello to it. And then it leaves. Conscious being keeps going. That's not our experience. Our experience is that there is a continual flow of vrittis. And I know one vritti at a time. There's this vritti, which is known, which is and is known. Now this next vritti is and is known. Next vritti is and is known. Next vritti is and is known. Right? You could do this forever. The next vritti is and is known. Next is known. Is known. What does this really mean? Is that the vrittis come and go, but the is knownness doesn't. Vritti is known. Is known. Is known. Is known. For that second, is known. Is known. The is known doesn't come and go. The is known is like the adhishtana of every single vritti. It's what every single vritti enjoys while it is there. While it's there in your mind, it is and it is known. When the next vritti comes, it is and it is known. Then you start to realize that this is knownness, this is and this is known, right, is not something that I can look at, but it's something that is never not there. I can't look at it as an object. I can't look at it as a vritti. And yet, it is never not there. No matter what the experience is, it is known. So what is the word that points in my language, the language that we speak, what points to that one that is and is known? Is me. It is me. There is no other. I mean, now what would another word be? It would be like I or me, whatever. What does Atma mean? Atma? Atma means the self. So in English you say, it is myself. It is myself. It is me. Because I am the one, the only one, that is continually present as these vrittis go along. Now the question is, okay, this me, the one who is the constant me, can I objectify me to know it? Can I objectify me as an object? And you would say, not really. I can't objectify consciousness so that I have a subject-object relationship with consciousness. I can objectify my body, and I can objectify my sense organs easily. I can objectify all of the thoughts in my mind, You know, I can even objectify what I don't know. I can give you an endless list of the things that I know I don't know, and those will only be the things that I know that I don't know, right? And then there's an infinite number of things beyond that. But I can tell you hundreds of things, I suppose, that I don't know, because I'm aware of what's in my memory banks and what's in my experience. I can know that's never been my experience. I don't know it. But the not knowing, the ajnanam itself, is something that I illumine. You know, I know that I don't know. I know that I know. I know that I don't know. So say if I say, I know that I know. I know that I know English. How do you know that you know English? Well, I speak it all the time. Of course I know that I know English. I know what my house looks like in Berkeley. How do you know that you know what your house looks like? Because I've seen it so many times, and I can recall the vritti of it perfectly. And I can take you on an imaginal tour of the whole house. I know that I know it. Right? But right now I'm not thinking of my house, you know. I'm thinking of this hall here. Where's the house? Well, the house has gone back into my memory banks, right? And so I only know, in terms of objectification, whatever is the vritti, whatever the vritti that is right here, that I know, whatever that vritti may be. Can you become a vritti of yourself? A more accurate way to say that, do you need a vritti? Do you need a vritti to be known? Because everything in the universe needs a vritti to be known. Because why? Because it's not self-evident. It's not self-evident. It requires a pramana. If I don't use a means of knowledge, then there's nothing to illumine it. So just think, is there anything here that can come and introduce itself to you without a vritti? If the vritti is not there, you don't know it. But is that true for yourself? Another way to say it, is that true for consciousness, for me? Do I need to have a vritti of myself for myself to light up? And I would say, oh, that's a really interesting question. If I'm a conscious being, it's me that is a conscious being, does me, this conscious being, require a vritti or a pramana in order for me to know myself? And even then, as me, am I performing a function internally in any way whatsoever for me to be present? Do I need some internal kind of vritti within consciousness to know consciousness? What function is necessary for consciousness to know consciousness? Does consciousness have to split up into a knower and a known in order for consciousness to be known? Does it have to split up into subject-object in for consciousness to be known? That would be keeping you really busy, because the subject-object relationship between consciousness illumining consciousness, right, would then have to have a consciousness, I suppose, that's aware of this function of consciousness illumining consciousness. It goes into a very strange infinite regress. And the other problem is, you've already created a duality. You've created a duality, a subject-object duality. And now consciousness is aware of consciousness. So these two consciousnesses must take place within time and space. If consciousness itself is just consciousness, then there's nothing to divide it into two consciousnesses, because consciousness itself illumines all vrittis, and it also illumines time and space, which are also objectified. And so, what is happening with this consciousness? How is consciousness known? And what we say is, you know, consciousness doesn't need to be known because it's self-evident. Self-evident means there is no subject-object relationship necessary. Consciousness is its own self-evident experience. Now, by experience, when we use the word, we usually think, I have to experience this, or I have to experience this, or I have to experience this. The experience means all of the things that come my way, that come into consciousness. But do I have to do something to experience consciousness? Do I have to do something to experience me? Or am I the experience? You would say, because I am consciousness, consciousness is its own experience without any subject-object relationship necessary. And it is this consciousness, this me, that we label as me, that's the word for me, for consciousness. I am conscious, I am a conscious being, I am me, this me that I am. I don't, would never say, me, well, you know, I have no existence, I would have to somehow establish my existence. I have really no existence as far as I know. And as far as I know, I have no consciousness either. Who's going to say that? You say, yes, yes, of course I exist. And yeah, of course I'm a conscious being. I know that. So that fact that I am and I exist, I'm a conscious being, I would say this, it is given. It is a given. That is not a problem. And it is the conscious being itself, the me, it's the only thing that is a given, that doesn't require a pramana to land on it so that I can have a subject-object relationship with it so that it can be known. I never think that about myself. And so the one thing in all that is that does not need to be established by a pramana is conscious being. That is not even the shastra is not necessary at all to establish myself as conscious being. We don't need the Vedanta for that. That because the conscious being that I am is self-evident. I don't need a pramana for it. You know? But I become the basis, you know, of knowledge for all vrittis. I am the known, my self-evident consciousness is the knownness, the existence, the being which all vrittis enjoy. And so what that means with every single vritti, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is, it is, it is, it is. The isness isn't moving. The vritti is moving like this, but the isness is not moving. The isness, the amness, the isness, which is really experientially only your amness. You don't look at isness over there or arness over there. No? The isness itself is just my own self-experience of amness. The consciousness is not something that's ever objectified. I am the conscious being. I'll even say that I am a conscious being. This is me, conscious being. I am the conscious being. So the Upanishads are not needed. The pramanas, the means of knowledge that we have, none of them are needed. Not even the Vedanta Shastra is needed for that. Because I am self-evident me. Try to get rid of yourself. We worked a little bit in the meditation. Try to get rid of yourself. You know, try to put a bag. Sometimes they say put a bag over your put a bag over yourself, a thick black bag, and see if you can, you know, somehow cover the conscious being that you are. You know? Try to displace it with another conscious being. Okay, this conscious being, you leave now. Let me bring in this one. Try to shift it in any way. Try to cover it. Another great thing to try. Try to imagine it as non-existent. That's really a wonderful imagination. Okay, we're just going to make everything non-existent. I'm going to turn all of my pramanas, everything, just away, not only from me, but from everything. I'm shutting them all down so that there is absolutely no experience whatsoever. It is the zero state. There is nothing. So try. And you can do that successfully if you have kind of if you've practiced enough on being able to totally withdraw your mind, you know. To withdraw your sense organs and withdraw your mind completely. You can do it very successfully for everything except you. Because you will be the one left standing. And you will be illumining what? Nothing. You've withdrawn everything. So you even kind of withdraw your mind. You just make your mind a blank screen, you know. So you say, okay, now here we are, closer, closer, closer. I'm not experiencing anything. I'm not experiencing anything. I'm not experiencing anything. Oh, there. There is no experience except for me. There's no experience. There's zero experience. Experience is now non-existent, at least for the moment. There's no experience except for me. Okay, then we have to try for me now. Okay, I've gotten rid of all experience except for me. Let's get rid of that too. But you can't. You can't, because consciousness is not objectifiable. As an object within the dream, or as an object within the creation, have a subject-object relationship with it to move it aside. Whatever you do, you can put a bag over your head, or put your, imagine in a really thick vault or something that is completely dark. You know, like you walk into this dark, black, absolutely black vault, and you shut the door, and you're sitting there, and then what are you doing? I'm illumining blackness. I'm illumining, you know, the blackness. Well, can you paint yourself black? Let me be the blackness too. Okay, everything is black. Are you aware of the blackness? Of course I'm aware of the blackness. I'm the luminary that lights up the blackness. Can you turn that off, please? Can you turn the consciousness off? Can you turn your consciousness off? Can you turn your being off? That's a good meditation, because you absolutely cannot do it. And so the Shastra, we know that we can't objectify this me. We can objectify the body and the mind and the sense organs and our knowledges and ignorances and the ahankara and our emotions, all of these things, our relationships, everything we can objectify with no problem. But can I objectify myself as an object? Say, no. Then the question is, do I need to? Is my being, is consciousness itself, dependent upon some means of knowledge in order to know me? Not at all. Is the Shastra, the Vedanta, the Upanishads, are they going to be something that makes me known? No, not at all. In fact, when you gain this knowledge, absolutely nothing changes in reference to conscious being. Then what do I need the Shastra for? You need the Shastra, you need the Upanishads, because there's a mistake taking place from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, from the standpoint of your mind, from the standpoint of this jiva within Maya. There is a mistake happening that is creating a lot of samsara for you. The mistake is not a mistake in reference to your own self-experience. The mistake has to do with what you, because of not knowing who you are, your own self-experience, the self-evident me, not recognizing yourself, because you cannot be objectified, so you don't know what to do with yourself, you just simply are. But all of the, take just the mind itself, which reflects sattva, which is then located in this physical body. This physical body is also enjoying consciousness because of the sattva of the sense of touch. The sense organs are enjoying consciousness because the sense organs are sattva, so they reflect consciousness. My mind and my buddhi, you know, and the chitta, when I bring the memories forward, the ahankara, they all enjoy consciousness. All sattva. Every vritti in the mind is sattva. And so, now, here I am in this world as a jiva, and I am a conscious being, having these pramanas, all of which look outward, you know. And so here I am, this conscious being, abiding in this body from the standpoint of being a jiva in here. I am me and you are you. This whole body seems to enjoy consciousness. It seems to be a conscious being. And yes, it is, from its own standpoint, definitely it's a conscious being, even though this body is only known through the use of your pramanas. This body is not self-evident, right? You, through your sense of touch, you know, you can feel the body. Through your sense of sight, you can see the body. Through your sense of taste, you can taste the body. You know, through your sense of hearing, you can hear the body. That's how this body is known. It's not self-evident me. It's objectified knowledge. But then I enjoy consciousness, so I don't really let my mind even go that far. I'm just this. I'm this body. I'm this conscious being. And this body is subject to death, so I am subject to death, right? I am my mind because I'm the conscious being. My mind is a conscious being. I can't have a vritti that doesn't enjoy conscious being. So my mind, which is indwelling this body, is a conscious being. In fact, this whole body with my sense organs and my mind, the whole thing is a conscious being. The whole thing is subject to death, you know. And my mind, you know, of course, I am my mind, and my mind is so unstable, you know, and I really can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about becoming happy or becoming sad or becoming agitated or becoming depressed or becoming, even with a prana, or becoming exhausted or becoming tired. You know, these are just my gunas. These are my qualities, aren't they? What are all of those cognitions, all of those experiences, how do they affect me? Consciousness. Because the body is illumined, because the body, it is known, and because the body reflects consciousness through the sense of touch, this body is known, right? Through my sense organs, this body is known. The mind and sense organs are known because they're sattva. They reflect consciousness, right? So all of this is known, but what does it do to me? How does it affect me? Actually, it doesn't affect me in any way, because I'm the one because of whom all of these things are known. So in fact, I, as the conscious being, I'm not affected at all. These things are all known only through the use of my pramanas. That's it. If I don't have eyes, I can't see this body. If I don't have ears, I can't hear any sound. If I don't have a sense of touch, I can't feel this body. It's not even here for me. So you get rid of your eyes and the sense of touch and your sense organs. Wow. Yeah. You don't have much experience of the body. You're still here. You and your mind, we can say. Here you are, you and your mind. You know? And so then what? The mind also is known, right? And it is continually changing. So as long as I have ajnanam, then I can say, I used to have some perception of a body, now I have no perception of a body, now I'm just this continually changing mind. That's who I am. Why? Because the mind, from its own standpoint, always enjoys me. But what if I start doing some vichara, or some viveka, or the shastra pops in? The Vedanta shastra, you know. What if the Upanishads pop in? And then what happens? Still, nothing at all happens to me. For me, just as conscious, self-evident conscious being, it makes no difference whether I have self-knowledge or not. I illumine ignorance as well as illumining knowledge. I'm totally, it's not like, now finally Brahman knows itself and it is so happy. You know, finally, the Atma now has discovered itself. No. The Atma, the self, which is Brahman, which is non-dual, is always exactly the same. And from its own standpoint, it just simply is conscious being. That's it. In order to have a variety of experiences, it has to be reflected in the sattva, reflected in the mind, reflected in the Ishvara Upadhi. And then the Ishvara Upadhi becomes known, the mind becomes known, the sense organs become known, the objects of perception become known. But you know what? I don't become known, because I already am known. I am self-evident. And from my own experience, I am free. I am free by my swarupa, by my nature. I have never not been free. And I have never not been a samsari walking around in the creation either. Yeah. But us, we're the samsaris walking around in the creation, you know. We're walking around in the creation means this body, mind, sense organs are walking around in the creation, all lit up nicely because of sattva, by me, who, from my own standpoint, have never done anything, never will be do anything, and really one without a second, the very self in all beings, the self of the whole creation, but not from my standpoint. From my standpoint, I'm just simply me. Not big, not small, not red, not brown, not heavy, not light, not big, not small, just me. All of this, all of these things that are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, you know, they are what we call mitya. This whole creation's body, mind, sense organs, all of this is what we call mitya. Why? Because number of reasons. One is that obvious one. All of these things within the creation require a pramana in order to be known. That means they require a subject-object relationship in order to be known. You know? If they require a subject-object relationship to be known, then what is the nature of the subject and what is the nature of the object? How can the subject exist and how can the object exist? Because the subject comes into being and goes out of being, the object comes into being and goes out of being, the use of a given pramana comes into being and goes out of being. So these subject-object relationships, both of them enjoy consciousness, and the pramana also enjoys consciousness. So you have the consciousness, which is the sat-chit of the pramatra, the knower, the consciousness, which is the sat-chit of the known, and the consciousness, which is the sat-chit of the pramana. Right? And so this trinity of knower, knowing, known, the whole thing is illumined by what, or enjoys what consciousness? The consciousness of conscious being. But from each one of their standpoints, each one must enjoy consciousness and must enjoy existence. The knower, it must enjoy consciousness and existence. The pramana, it must enjoy consciousness and existence. The object of knowledge must enjoy consciousness and existence. But all of them come into and out of consciousness, and they come into and out of knownness and existence. They come in, they're mitya. If they come in, this knower known is already, you're already in dvaita, in duality. Therefore, you're already subject to time. Therefore, you're already mitya. So any part of you that is the knower and any part of you as the known, those are mitya. They require consciousness, but you're not always the knower. You're not always the known. The knower and the known continually changes. What remains is the one adhishtana, me, conscious being. And I am not continually changing. I am the one who all of these things are taking place in. But these things coming into being, going out of being, coming into being, going out of being, all infinitely divisible, going into an infinite regress that you can do nothing about. You can't stop that. You can't stop them from coming into being and going out of being. And yet, while they're here, they are and they are known. I am the one who is and is known. All of these depend upon that me, that isness and is knownness. That isness and is knownness is not something that is objectifiable. So how can I know it? I can only be it. I don't need to know it. It is self-evident. But I don't need the Shastra for that. I need the Shastra, the Upanishads, to make the student understand that all of this is mitya. It has no existence being of its own. That the whole thing, the knower, the knowing, and the known, everything that I perceive simply shines after me. Even everything known, everything unknown, it shines after me alone. I am the constant. I am the invariable. I am the only thing which you cannot get rid of. In your experience, you can get rid of everything. You can turn your back on everything. You can replace every experience you have with another vritti. You can replace every emotion you have with another emotion. You have so much control, so much freedom. But try to replace yourself. Try to change yourself. Try to objectify yourself. There's nothing at all you can do, nor do you want to do anything. And so it is that one that the Shastra is now really trying to make you understand. And it's going, making it very clear that this me, the one that I am, you know, it is something beyond the known. It is beyond all pramanas, all means of knowledge. It doesn't, and it is beyond the unknown. It requires no pramanas. It doesn't require anything because it is self-evident. We need pramanas to illumine those things which are not self-evident. Consciousness is self-evident, and so it doesn't need a pramana. Consciousness is free. It is already liberated. It's never not been liberated. So consciousness is absolutely free. Who is not free? This body, mind, sense organs, that because of a beginningless ajnanam, takes me to belong to be like a guna, like a quality of this body, mind, which dies, of this mind, which is continually changing, this body, which is different than your body, which may or may not go to heaven, which is traveling this way and that way, the sukshma sharira, which is traveling around, you know. This is where the problem is. The problem is not me. And I don't need the shastra at all. I'm already free. But it's the one that's embodied, the jiva that's embodied, that has this as though veil of ignorance between myself and myself. Something that is there behind my mind so that my mind doesn't recognize that its own swarupa is the Satchitatma. It doesn't know that. And so what does it take for its swarupa, its nature? Well, I am an existent being who is continually changing and sometimes happy, sometimes sad. This is the result of ignorance. It's called anyonya adhyasa. It means mutual superimposition, which means this. The mind, with all of its problems, you know, all of its moods and emotions and all of everything, the mind takes itself, because of ignorance, to be the conscious being. Right? So it takes itself to be me. Right? And it also takes me to be itself. What does that mean? Then I become one who has all of these gunas. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm sad, sometimes I'm this, sometimes I'm that. You know? Sometimes I get so depressed I have no control of it. It just takes place. Sometimes I feel happy. I don't know why I'm feeling so happy, but I'm feeling happy. Sometimes I'm feeling frustrated. Whatever. These things are just arising, you know. Arjuna says it's like I'm in a ship, a small little boat out in the middle of the ocean, and the waves are roaring, you know. And I can't do anything about it. He says this to Krishna. What can I do about this? You know? And so that's my experience, because that's the experience of the mind, and the mind enjoys consciousness, so it takes itself to be me. It doesn't know. It doesn't recognize me different. It can't differentiate me, its own swarupa, from its own experiences. The shastra needs to do that. And once it does that, it actually goes on and on and on, differentiating my being from everything objectifiable. Differentiating me from Ishwara. Because Ishwara, in terms of the Maya Upadhi, is objectifiable. All experiences that come and go are objectifiable. I need to be differentiated from those experiences. And then what do I recognize? That myself is non-dual, is infinite. Because all of these things that are coming and going are coming into an existence and out of existence, and therefore they're mithya, they have no being of their own. So I, in fact, am their being. So I don't need the shastra to give me my own self-experience, because I'm self-evident. But I do need the shastra to make me realize that all of this is mithya, and I am the one non-dual self, this me, this simple me. Not somebody else. This simple me is not contained by anything in the creation, but is the adhishtana of the entire creation. That's what the shastra has to make me recognize, that I am Brahman, that I am not just a little pocket of consciousness, innermost pratyagatma to this body. If you think that, then you know very little, the previous verse. Mm-hmm. You think that, then you know very, very little, you know. If you think that God is a devata, which exists there in time and space, you know, one devata, not all devatas. If you think that conscious being, you know, that the Atman, that the self, is the self of all beings, the self of all devatas, and the self of you also, then okay, that's good. But if you think that the self is your little pratyagatma in this body, then no, you know very little. You know very, very little. Why do they even say you know anything at all? And they don't say, you don't know anything at all. They say you know very, very little. Why? Because you are Brahman. You are Brahman. That's the truth. You are Brahman. And so you recognize, I am Brahman. But I am Brahman, this pratyagatma, abiding in this body. That's the problem. But that this body is Brahman is true. That you are Brahman, that you are Brahman, that the rug is Brahman, the floor is Brahman, the lamp is Brahman, that there is nothing that is not Brahman. So whatever you point to as Brahman, that is true. But you only know the little, little, tiny bit, you know, because you have to be able to say that there is nothing that is not Brahman. There is, in fact, only Brahman. Everything else is mithya. It has no being. It has no consciousness from its own standpoint. I am the conscious being, which is reflected in this whole infinite creation. That's what has to be known. I have to know that I am free and always have been free. And so now, in this summing up this verse, he's just really telling you what the problem is. He hasn't solved the problem yet. Yeah, but when he says, you know, Brahman is not known as an object. For those who know Brahman, it is not known as an object. For those who don't know Brahman, it is known as an object. Those people know very little. You're never going to be wrong because there's nothing that's not Brahman, right? But you only know a little bit. That's the idea. So now we have to keep going to see. Go further. Next verse.
Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.